The following podcast is a part of the Spin Studio Network.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Flourish and Fulfilled. Now, this week is all about juggling business and babes. Now, if there is anybody in my life that knows a thing or two about juggling business and motherhood, it is my oldest and best friend, Olivia Jenkins. So welcome to Flourish and Fulfilled.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Now, I know your story and it is so inspiring, everything that you do, and far out. Like, I take my hat off to you. So Liv has three kids under the age of, well, was three. And Charlotte, who is the most recent one, she's literally like, 4 months old, still juggling.
Yeah.
Work, all your clients, no maternity leave, and being an absolute boss. If anybody knows a thing or two about juggling, it is definitely you. So do you want to tell my listeners that maybe don't know you a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you for the intro. Very kind. My name is Olivia. I am a mum of three. So initially I actually started my career shortly after school. So going right back to the very beginning, I actually grew up in a family business. So my mum owns a global skincare brand. And so I always was very engrossed in all things business. And I guess, you know, growing up with a mum who was really ambitious as a child, I was very much exposed to that environment. So I have three kids now. So initially when I left school, I went and worked for mum's business. And then I went into a couple of other roles after that. So I, you know, moved my way up in mum's business to general manager. And then after that position, sought out a couple of other roles, which I was really passionate about. I've always stayed in the health and beauty space. My most recent role before starting my own business was actually working for a really beautiful tanning, makeup, skincare brand. And I was very lucky to have fallen pregnant 6 months into starting that role as general manager. And luckily for me, I had the most beautiful, supportive female founder that I was working for. And I'm still very close with her to this day, but she really provided a safe space for me to be pregnant and having babies within her business and feeling very much supported in that team.
It's so important. I know that for us, like within our weekly Zoom calls, there's often up to like six kids in our Zoom calls. And that's huge.
There's a lot of breastfeeding going on in our Zoom
calls. There's a lot of boobs.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. So I was really lucky to have, you know, fallen pregnant in that position and to have that support from her. So I had my first baby. I went straight back to work initially, still in the general manager position. And so I had a lot of flexibility working from home and then coming back to the office sometimes, you know, with a baby in tow. 8 weeks after having Henry, I found out I was pregnant again.
Glutton for punishment. This is me and Kai. Yeah.
I still blame it on you because I remember bringing Henry up to see you in the Gold Coast and he was 5 weeks old. And I remember you were like, oh, you know, just get back on the horse again, have another baby, have them close together. It'd be the best thing. Look at the boys. It'd be great. And then I think I got home and 2 weeks later I had that positive pregnancy test. And I remember crying. Sorry, Arch, if you're listening to this one day. But I remember crying thinking, oh, my God, how am I going to handle this? Like, this is a lot. And I didn't have the best birth and recovery and all the rest of it. So it was a lot. Anyway, so fast forward, I remember my boss at the time was tanning me one day and I remember complaining to her just before I found out. I'm like, I just don't know what's wrong with me. My body's just not bouncing back. And then turns out I was pregnant again. So that explains everything. So anyways, had Arch, continued working in that business and things just got crazy. It's still a bit of a blur that first 12 months, but look, we got through it. And then when Archer was about a year and a half old, I think he must have been about 18 months, I sat down with my boss at the time and I just said, look, I love you so much. I love this business. We've had the most amazing time working together, but I think it's time for me to start my own business and to start a new adventure. And so that's when I decided that I was going to step away from being an employee and actually go into my CEO mindset. And at that point I had the two boys, so it was, you know, quite daunting thinking, oh my God, am I making a mistake? You know, am I going to launch that I've started my consulting business and then it's radio silence. You know, what if I don't get any clients? What if nothing happens? What if I make a mistake? But I remember just thinking, feel the fear and do it anyway. It's all going to be okay. Just, you know, make the decision that you're going to start and then the rest will come.
And throughout all of that, you also studied your MBA as well.
Yes, sorry. I forgot about that minor detail, guys. I actually started the MBA 6 months before I felt pregnant with Henry, my first. And then, yeah, that was the other reason it was so overwhelming, because that course was actually a supercharged MBA. And you had to do all of your assignments and exams in a 12-month period simultaneously with full-time work. So that's basically how the course was structured. So I was, you know, pregnant, breastfeeding, newborn, trying to exam prep, assignment prep, do my thesis in the end. But yes, thank you for that minor detail.
Yeah.
I've forgotten.
So just to recap, 3 kids in 3 years, working full-time and an MBA and didn't take maternity leave. So yeah, I know we're not, and you and I are very big on this, not glorifying the grind, but far out, that's a grind.
It's definitely a lot. And I very much recognise that this path is not for everyone. And I'm really passionate about this, because I remember, you know, when I first had Henry and even Archer to a certain extent, I was very conscious that I felt different to a lot of the mums that I was seeing online. And to this day, I take my hat off to women and mums that can be home full time with their kids.
I
really do. Yeah. Like, I personally, I would not be able to do that for my own mental health, because I feel that by having my business and the, you know, the stimulation that my brain was used to prior to having children still in my life, I am able to show up as a mum much better than what I would if I was, you know, pushed to my limits and out of my comfort zone trying to be an educator and everything full time at home with 3 kids.
Yeah, that I fully 100% agree with that.
Yes.
Now, I know that you, there's a little tagline of being like the CEO's wing woman.
Yes.
So what do you do for women in business now?
Okay. So essentially, I came from a position as a general manager. So I had almost 10 years as a general manager, and that entire role is to support the CEO. So if anyone has read the book Rocket Fuel, you'll know that there's integrators and visionaries. I have always worked for visionaries, and they are the big picture, ideas, inspiration. They're a million miles an hour. A lot of the time they can be quite erratic.
I'm having like a little chuckle to this, because so Liv has, even well before she started her own business, has had to pull me into line over and over and over with business. And I always have these big ideas and no way of being able to execute them, and all these really creative things. And I'm like, I'm going to do this and this. And she's the one that goes, well, do you need to open another business? Like, you can actually love that and not need to turn it into a business.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're good at that.
Sophie is a classic visionary. Anyone who knows Sophie, she is my ideal client, because she just has all of these ideas, and it is my job as the integrator to run behind her and sort of sort out all of the chaos and commercialize the ideas to make sure that they're worth doing and they're profitable and all of those things. So essentially what I do for clients now is I am the CEO's wing woman, and I commercialize and provide the operational and financial structure and the strategic, I guess, underpinning of things to make sure that the client that I'm working with is achieving their goals. And I think this part's important as well, because when I start working with a client, it's really important to make sure that we identify what the goals actually are, because there are a lot of reasons for having businesses, and the reasons for having businesses are different from client to client or person to person. So some people want lifestyle businesses that provide financial and time freedom, and then other people are very intentional around, I am starting this business to scale it and I want to sell, and that is my end goal. So obviously the advice and the support is different for each one of those scenarios.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that, I know for a fact some of your clients and I are so different. So it's a very good point.
Yes.
So today's episode, I'm going to actually start a little bit different, and I'm going to do some fire questions. So I'm just going to ask you random questions and you have to say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Ready? All right. Favorite food?
Pasta.
Alter ego name?
Cheyenne.
What? Okay. Sunrise or sunset?
Oh, sunset.
What is your favourite swear word?
Shit.
What is your weird quirk?
Spreadsheets.
Yeah, you far out. I know this is supposed to be a quick fire, but fuck me. Like, you should see my marketing calendar. It's 12 months in advance. It's got like 25 tabs. And it's just everything's hyperlinked back to random things. And if I ever go in there and stuff it up, I hear about it.
I can't with you and spreadsheets. You break everything and it's very stressful.
What's your hidden talent?
Oh, spreadsheets also. I don't know. Hidden talent. Probably cooking.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a good cook.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I'm not shocked. I wasn't shocked. What's your most used emoji?
Love heart eyes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you do that a lot.
Yeah.
Favourite child?
Oh, it changes on the daily, but probably sweet. No, I'm kidding. At the moment, Charlotte, because she's just so sweet and she's the most beautiful little angel baby, but it does change sometimes on the hourly, depending on what the kids are doing.
So Sweep, just as an FYI for those listening at home, Sweep was Liv's
puppy.
Was a dog. And she literally would have breastfed this thing if she could because it had a cleft palate and she had to feed it with a bottle and she would literally sit there as if she was breastfeeding this puppy. And, yeah, anyway, so it's a puppy, not a dog. I mean, not a child. Would you rather have Dix's fingers or a dick as your nose?
Dix's fingers because you can put gloves on.
You could also have sex with 10 chicks at once.
I'm into that.
Okay, there you go. That should have been your weird quirk. What's the best dream that you've ever had?
Ooh, probably after Sweet died, seeing him again.
Yeah, that's sad.
But I don't usually dream that often.
Really?
No.
I actually read a book a couple of weeks ago in regards to the imagination and creativity, and that when we lose the ability to dream and nap, it's a part of our creative mind turning off. And it's
I know why that is. Oh, okay. Too many Google Sheets.
Probably too many tabs open. Yeah. All right. So I know that you work with a lot of women in business that are also mums.
Yes.
What do you see is the biggest struggle that they face?
I think the juggle and the guilt.
Oh, my God, the mum guilt.
Yeah. And it is something that I have a lot of conversations with clients about, my mum clients, which is majority of my clients.
Yeah. Why do you think you attract mostly mums in business?
Know. Maybe because I'm relatable and I guess if you're a founder and CEO in your business, it's really important that you work with people who understand your environment because there are certain quirks that happen in our lives on a daily basis that we have to have the capacity to sort of handle. And I think it's comforting working with someone who understands your life.
Yeah.
Particularly because I probably have my kids quite close together, you know, in comparison to the general population. I had Archie and Henry within 12 months or less than 12 months apart. I did learn what caused pregnancy though during that. And so I decided to have, well, actually that's a lie. We hadn't really intentionally planned any of the pregnancies. We were sort of just leaving it up to the universe in some sense. But, yeah, with Charlotte, there was 2.5 years break. So all up three under 3.5. So that's quite a lot of children who are not that independent at that age. Mm. And, yeah, there's a lot of juggling happening. But I think that's the biggest thing for clients is just the juggle and the guilt.
There's so much mum guilt when it comes to work because it's that vicious cycle of having to work – wanting to work and being torn between loving your job and loving the creativity of it and wanting to spend time with your kids but also needing to provide and then, yeah. How do you coach clients to cope with that?
I think it's just about being really clear around what it is you actually want and what's important to you. So if you have young children and you know, it's really important to you that you spend time together, then we plan out the weeks in such a way that you are working, you know, in the certain amount of hours that you want to be working. And potentially it could be that 2 days in the week are your off days or you're working from home days. So, and I think the other aspect of it as well is women and mums, I swear, do not outsource enough.
Yeah.
We have this thing like we have to be a cleaner, a cook, a this, a that, all of the things simultaneously to running empires. You know, some of these businesses are really big and have a lot of people in them. And even if they don't, it's still you're wearing a lot of hats even at startup. outsource.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because even in those early days, everybody would say and have comments to me that you must have a cleaner, you must have a cook, you must do this, you must do that. And I was like, not, well, I didn't remember. Mm. Like it was like...
But even if you did, so what?
Exactly.
And that's also probably supporting
and taking that another mum. Yeah.
Like how do you know that mum's not a cleaner and that's their business?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's lots of home meal services out there. So I think that that is actually a good thing as well because you're doing, you're staying in your lane and I'm really big on this. What is highest and best use of your time and energy?
Yeah.
If you are trying to be all things to everyone, that is actually not going to serve you because all that is going to happen is you're going to become very drained, very tired. You're not going to be doing the things that you love.
No.
Aka spending time with your kids or your family or filling up your cup with me time because you're getting home and you're spending all of your time doing X, Y, Z, whatever those things are. So I just tend to coach clients and say, let's be really clear on what you want because if we're not clear on what you want, then how do we know what we're working towards? And that can be from a personal or business sense. And then trying to figure out, okay, what is highest and best use of your time? Let's keep you in those areas and let's find, delegate, outsource, hire.
It definitely takes a village, doesn't it?
It does.
It's like we've kind of lost that. I know that you and I are very similar in all aspects of our life, but especially in regards to like family support with our children is, for different reasons, is we don't have that huge hands-on family support.
And I think as well, because I think about my mum, she had my sister when she was 19. I had my first baby at 25. So I think what's happening now as well is women are, you know, waiting a little bit longer to have kids.
And,
maybe not you, but generally it's sort of like mid-20s or 30s even. So, you know, we had our babies at 25, which I don't think is that old, but it's certainly not super young either. But what ended up happening was our parents are still in their own businesses and leading really busy lives. So they're not really at that stage of their life yet where they have a lot of free time to support us with the kids. They do what they can, obviously, when they can. But that, I think, is the reality for a lot of people as well. Mm. Not everybody has that family support, or it could be that people are interstate or whatever. So,
So on the outsourcing thing, what, number one, is your best things that you outsource, and what do you think everybody should outsource, not only in business but kind of family and motherhood as well?
I think from a personal sense, for me, I have a cleaner. So that is really important to me because I don't want to come home on my weekends and spend hours and hours cleaning when I could be spending that time with my kids. So that's a big one for me. Obviously, our kids are in care as well. We chose to go down a nanny path, so we have a really beautiful career nanny, and shout out Sarah. I would not be able to do anything that I do without her support and also the comfort to know that my kids are in really good care and I have full trust and faith in her. So that's really important. Meals as well is another one. So, you know, if you're getting a meal service or, you know, there's lots of different brands available for that offering, just to try and make the dinner process really easy because it's one less decision that you have to make in your day. It's kind of like laying out your clothes the night before. In a business sense, depends on what your skill set is, but the general ones for me, like if you're doing your own bookkeeping still, that's usually one that you would want to outsource unless you it really energizes you or something to be doing your books. But for 99% of people, not really.
I don't understand people that like bookkeeping.
No, it's a lot of people. Like especially if you're your, you know, visionary type of personality, you want to be creating content and doing growth activities and sales-based things and customer interaction things. Very unlikely that you'll find a visionary that's back end, you know, so is thinking about operations and finance and, you know, compliance and legal
policies.
Exactly. So, you know, bookkeeping I think is a really good one. Obviously, always make sure you have a really good accountant on site as well. Admin, any of the lower level tasks that don't really require a CEO headset to be doing, we need the CEO in the business to be driving the business forward. So thinking about growth and strategy and big picture vision stuff.
Okay, so on that, that's a really good point. So I remember, I don't even know when, but 5-7 years ago before I had hired somebody, it was too hard for me to train them because I was in that mindset of I would then have to train them and they'll never do a good enough job because I was doing it, and it was harder to actually onboard somebody and have them there doing the job than it was to just do it myself. Mm-hmm.
Big trap, but yes.
And a lot of people do this.
Yes.
How do you get out of that mindset?
I think you really have to take a step back and think to yourself, if I can recruit find and recruit the right person for this role who has similar values and vision and understands where I'm going with the business. And that's really important. You have to have aligned values, otherwise it will not work. But 99.9% of the time, if you hire the right person and you onboard properly, you will not have any issues in terms of getting those tasks fulfilled. I think it's just about being really intentional in that process and having a clear recruitment process. I often task, so I'll get down to the final two candidates and I'll task both of them, and I usually make an offer based on the outcomes of those tasks. And then obviously having a clear onboarding process helps as well, because you're then setting that person up for success. And the other thing that I see as a mistake that often happens is not being clear on expectations. Mm. People are not mind readers. So every person that they potentially have worked for has different quirks and different, you know, belief systems on things or different sets of expectations. So we can't assume that when you're hiring somebody, they're going to magically walk into business and understand that you don't like them to have their phone on them during work hours, because their last boss might have been totally cool with that. Mm. And then they come and work for you and you've got a really hard no against it. And then that builds resentment. And so there's a whole flow on effect of things that can go wrong after that. So it's really important to onboard properly, be really clear around expectations, so there's no awkward moments down the track you have to pull them up on something. And just make sure that you're really investing the time. It'll be hard in the beginning because you are going to lose time out of the business potentially, especially if this is your first hire. But I promise you, if you do the work and you onboard correctly, it'll be a game changer.
So just on that, in regards to having to pull them up if they have done something incorrectly. Now, I am a notoriously,
I don't like conflict. Yeah.
So it ends up being all of my staff are my best friends, and I end up just like...
That's your leadership style though.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that we learned in doing my MBA as well, in the leadership topic, and we learned about different power styles. And funnily enough, it must be consistent with the visionary style, but I think the general style for a lot of clients that I work with is if I can build relationships with my people, then they will want to do good work because I'm nice to them and we have a friendship and there's a relationship there. The only challenge with that is when there's something that's gone wrong and you feel as a boss or something that there's something that employee has done that you're not happy with, it becomes very awkward for you to sit down with that person, and then it's potentially leaving them open to feeling like they're getting scolded by their friend.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to have just switch up your power styles in leadership and not only rely on one power source, so using different power sources when you're leading, which can be challenging to do, particularly if you're, you know, the headset that you are. But one little hack, if this is you and you feel really awkward pulling your team up on certain things, my advice is to book in 6 weekly check-ins. I find 6 weeks is a perfect number where it's not too often and not too, you know, infrequent as well. But you can sit down with your team like as a one-on-one, 6 weekly one-on-one, and you can address any feedback in that session. So that way you don't feel like potentially you have to call a standalone meeting to discuss XYZ. If there's a few things that you just want to chat about in that meeting and talk about, then you can do that in that one-on-one and you don't feel like it has to be this really serious full-on thing.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. Over the last 6 months, I can honestly say that my team are just the most beautiful, hardworking. I know. But just like... there's not any issues. There's nothing that I could possibly even complain about, and it works in flow. Mm-hmm. It is just the most seamless operating at the moment. It is just beautiful, and it's really easy to run the business based on the personalities and people that I have in the business. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't always been that way. And I think a massive thing is removing straight away if there was any people that didn't actually fit within the business, mm-hmm. which is something that's so hard for me because I'm like, oh, but I like them as a person, which is fine,
yeah.
but they don't work in the business.
Yes.
And being able to see people's strengths for what they are and either promote them to a different role or mm-hmm. change their positions. And it's been really, really, really good to be able to have the team that we've currently built.
Yes.
And you actually hire and fire for me. So that's a huge benefit for me.
I think the other one as well, just circling back to when you have potentially people on the team who, you know, may not be congruent with the values of the business or the rest of the people on the team. if you as a leader are not calling people out when you need to, that then sends a message to your team that they can do it too, or, you know, they might feel undervalued because this person's really not pulling their weight, and the whole team can see it and can feel it, but the leader's not, you know,
acting on it.
Correct. Mm. Is not leading.
Yep.
And I think as leaders, we have to be really responsible to make sure that we're actually setting the pace for the rest of the team and making sure that every member of the team feels 100% valued in what they're doing. And it's our responsibility as leaders to address that feedback, not only for the team, but for that person's growth as well.
Yeah.
Because if we're potentially, you know, I don't want to use the terms letting them get away with it, but you know what I'm saying. Mm. If that is being allowed, then potentially we are not serving that person. We're robbing them of the opportunity to grow within their role as well and take that feedback. So I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the hardest bosses I ever had taught me the most. Mm-hmm. Because they definitely taught me the most lessons and pushed me back into line in a really, yeah.
Yes. But it's about, you have to be fair, but it's also about consistency, because if you're walking into your business every day and people don't know what they're going to get from you that morning,
yeah,
that creates a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think that usually affects people's job security as well, because they're just completely unsure as to what's going to happen because everything's so erratic. So
yeah.
I think it's really important to focus on consistency with everything that you do as a leader in your business.
The other thing that's really important to me within my team is making sure that everybody that's in the team sees the greater purpose and wants to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I have this big thing and big belief that if you don't actually genuinely love your job and want to be there, then I'm not holding you here.
Yes.
So I only want people in my business who absolutely love what they're doing. And if they mm-hmm. don't, my style is to usually find them a different role within the company.
That's so true.
Which is not necessarily the best thing to do. It's better to actually hire the right person for the right role. But I find that I hire over personality, because that's just what aligns with me, and being able to make sure that we all have the same purpose and vision for the business. And mm-hmm. it works really well, because it means that they love the business and want to see it succeed and can see the greater good of it. So they all see the greater picture of why we're doing certain things, mm-hmm. Which is really helpful to their workload as well.
Yes.
So in saying that, obviously switching up from being like boss bitch to mum, mm-hmm. how do you go from being like firing someone to walking in the door and softening and going back into that mum role?
Yes. Okay. So to set the scene, when I started consulting, it was just before COVID. So it was August 2019. So it was quite, you know, fresh. I initially started working from home. My beautiful boss in my previous role said, come and work from the office still. We'd love to have your energy around here. It'd be great. So I went in and basically worked out from the old space that I was at before. And I did that for a few months. And then COVID hit. I went back home and I started working from a home office. That's when it became really difficult, because on one hand, I felt that I had less mum guilt and I was able to see the kids more frequently because I was at home and I was working from my home office. But then on the other hand, I sometimes would get cabin fever because I wouldn't leave the house the whole day. And then, you know, the kids would come home with the nanny or whatever, and I would feel like I have to at 4 o'clock, because I generally work 8 till 4, at 4 o'clock I'd walk out from my home office and then it would be bang, straight into mum mode, kids screaming, dinner needs to be on, you know, with all of the things that happen in your household. I have only just recently moved into an office space again, and it has changed my life.
Mm.
The kids were just getting to an age where it would just wasn't fair on them anymore either, because I felt like when I was on a Zoom call, I'd have to text the nanny and say, okay, I'm going to be out in an hour and a half, and I would hear her sort of like shushing the kids.
Yeah.
And that sort of took its toll on me as well. So now that I've moved out of the home environment and I'm driving just a short distance to get to my office, that has changed my life as well, because I'm now getting dressed every day for work, getting in my car, driving to my office, and I have time to calibrate for my day. And I do the same thing, obviously, when I'm driving home as well. I pull into the driveway if I need to have a couple of minutes of breath just to kind of have some breathing in the car before I step into the house. I'll do that, particularly if I've had quite a stressful day or a back-to-back day. And that is the best way for me to set my pace coming into mum life, because when I open that door, I don't want any of my work day to come into my home environment because that will then affect the kids, particularly if it's been stressful, because then you start snapping. And then that spirals into a whole lot of other feelings as well. So it's really important that you reset before going back into the house. Just going to circle back a little bit as well, because I know there'll be some listeners who have got really young kids, or you might have babies at the moment, and that's a different scenario as well. When I first started, I used to have this formula with working around the kids. So just to set the scene, I had two kids at this point under 18 months. So it was quite full on. But what I actually did was I took the time when the kids were asleep to do all of the tasks in the business or for work that I could not do if they were awake. So, for example, I did not do washing or dishes or cooking or anything like that when the kids were asleep. I did financial reports. I did my spreadsheets that I had to do. I took phone calls that I had to take when I had complete quiet. So I was very strategic around picking the tasks that I would need to do when the kids were asleep. And then obviously when the kids were awake, I could set them up with an activity and I could do lower concentration tasks. So if I had to pay bills, or, you know, I had to send some emails or get on top of a few little things that I knew that I could go back to easily if I was interrupted. That is how I planned all of my days. And that is what got me through. Because people would say to me all the time, like, how do you physically do this with two kids that young in tow? That was my secret.
Yeah. It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like even having all of the household tasks is a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And then adding in children and business. Yeah, it's absolutely, yeah, it's crazy. What are your favorite apps to use within business? Let's say like startup. Let's go startup apps. Mine would be Canva.
Absolutely. Canva is a dream. I'm so sorry to all the graphic designers out there. However, I will say that the graphic designers that I have in my network that I use the services of frequently are very pro Canva, which has been awesome because they've been able to adapt to that. But 100% Canva. I think if you're still using spreadsheets on a computer or Word docs and stuff, I would definitely move to Google Drive, Google Docs, Google Sheets, because there's something very comforting about having a live document that other people can work within. You have revision history. You're not going to lose it, you know.
If someone stuffs up the spreadsheet, you know it's Sophie.
Exactly. I can actually go back and check, guys.
She does.
So like, I will know if you break the spreadsheet.
Yeah, and it's always me that breaks the spreadsheet.
But everything is linkable as well. And I'm a big one for this. Obviously, because I did my MBA in marketing, I'm very growth orientated. That is, you know, strategy is my secret thing, my secret weapon. So for me, having all of those documents linked and the marketing plan there, on, you know, if I go back in time, am I allowed to share this about your marketing plan?
Oh, yeah, what you can share whatever you want.
So, guys, she used to have this whiteboard that she had this calendar, a yearly planner calendar thing that was paper that she stuck on the whiteboard. And the
I'm a visual.
They had to come and look at this whiteboard in the office. And I was like, okay, this is great if everyone's here in Burleigh or wherever we were. But obviously with your team now being quite virtual, it's really important that everything is online. So that is a big game changer. I think as your team grows as well, if you start adding more people into the mix, there's project management tools like Asana that are really helpful. Some people on the ClickUp bandwagon, I've tried it, don't rate it. So I'm back to Asana. And then obviously if you've got a virtual team as well, you can use things like Toggle, which track hours, and Xero is a game changer. Do you want to hear about econ ones too?
No. Okay. Yes, we do. Go.
And then obviously, so if you're a product-based business and, you know, Shopify, Klaviyo, you know, make sure that you're doing your Facebook ads as well and you've got some bottom of funnel retargeting ads set up. So there's lots of things that I like. I'm a bit of a tech fiend.
Do you feel that it is hard to be a female CEO in a man's world?
That's a tricky one. So I have grown up with a mum who was a CEO. So for me, this is very normal. I am so used to being around strong women, boss women, entrepreneur mindsets. And so for me, I have never really felt that it's that foreign. However, I will say that there was a lot of great white sharks that used to circulate around my mum back then because she had a business in beauty. And anyone who has a skincare brand or is familiar with that industry, you know, there's a lot of sharks that hang around because they see the margins that can happen in those types of businesses and they get excited. And, you know, they see someone like yourself, Soph, that's got that visionary personality and they think, great, this person's vulnerable and I can, you know, potentially find my way in here.
How many guys have I, like, not in relationship sense, how many guys have I been fucked over by in business?
It's so common. So one of my biggest things with clients and just females in business in general is financial education.
Yeah. Huge.
Massive thing.
And making sure you understand why the accountant is doing something and the process behind it. When I had my big business audit, that was probably the best thing for me because I had to actually learn every single thing that I was going to be questioned on and what I was allowed to claim and tax rulings and everything. And that was such a big, big lesson to learn.
Yes.
The other question that I really find interesting that I know that you and I talk about and probably controversial a little bit is ourselves are mums and we know how hard it is to be a mum and work full time and run businesses.
Yes.
And so when hiring a mum, why would a business hire a mum? And I know that, like, for me, I know that I have a lot of staff that are mums and I see their output when they're at work as probably three times the amount of those that don't have kids.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because we always say, like, it's so hard because as a mum, we have sick kids or we have a child that broke out in a rash or this one just fell off the table, this one needs stitches, this just happened, this just happened. And you see all of these and I know that so many people are like, oh, they've got young kids, it's harder for them, we don't really want to hire them and they would probably not be looking as favourable upon the mums. Do you agree with me in saying that sometimes the mums actually work harder?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's about the person.
Was that question even worded in a correct way?
No, it was. I understand what you're saying. I think, you know, it's really about the person, their skill sets, where they're at and what their motivations are. You know, if I had two candidates in front of me and one was a mum and one wasn't a mum, I would be looking purely at their skill set and what their values are. And do I think that they're going to be a good fit within the team that we've currently got, or am I going to trust this person? And I think a big one for me as well is doing the 16 personalities test.
Yeah.
Always do this when I'm recruiting because I want to know how that person is wired and what makes them tick and what their management style is like. How do they like to be managed? So I think those things are more important than, you know, if somebody has children or not. But 1,000% there are mums out there who can do an obscene amount of work and there's a person on your team, you know, that I'm thinking of.
I know.
Who is just incredible with the amount of output that she has on a daily basis. It is unbelievable.
I'm not afraid to say, Jackie is just like, is the most insane worker.
Yeah.
And she has two kids, same sort of thing. Like she is just such a workhorse in every single part of who she is. Like,
and she loves it.
Yeah. And I have never had to question, like, even if one of her kids is sick, I'm like, you're not taking a sick day because there's not even a slight amount of time in my brain that I would question that she hasn't done her workload for the week, even if the kids are sick. It's not even a, and that's such a beautiful place to be in that relationship role of having someone in my team that I trust and I know she loves my business as much as what I do to be able to have that. Yeah.
But, and it's like give and take as well. And people, you know, feeling valued in your team and knowing that you've ultimately got their back.
Yeah. So. Yes, it's good. So do you have any funny motherhood moments in business to share?
This is so embarrassing. I remember when I was, it must have been Archie, my second born, and it would have been relatively soon after having him because I was still expressing with a pump. And I took a call one day. I don't know what I was thinking because reflecting now, it's so obvious that it could have been her. But anyways, I was on the phone interviewing an agency for the business I was working for at the time to do some work. And it was a male that I was speaking to, which makes it even more awkward. So I was sitting there with my pump and I thought I was being really inconspicuous because I had the pump, like the actual head unit, right under the table, but obviously it was attached to my breast.
Hold on, a phone call or video?
No, it was a phone call, obviously not Zoom.
I literally thought you just had your tit out. I was like, that's pretty obvious.
If it was you, I would have, but yeah. No, it was someone else. I didn't know. So I had the pump there and like the head unit under the table and I'm just chatting away and, you know, asking about rates and, you know, all those types of things. Can you give me some case studies, like really doing a proper interview, you know, giving him the proper thorough once over. And then he stops the call and he's like, I'm really sorry. I just have to ask. Is there a frog in the background?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So
I could have died. I immediately, like, detached the breast pump and threw it across the room. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I've just got something on in the background. I'll just turn that off. I'm really sorry. I didn't realize that was disturbing the call. Put it on mute. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so awkward. And so ever since that day, I've learnt my lesson that you absolutely cannot use your breast pump on the phone.
They sound like a cow, like literally like
being milked.
Yeah. It's a really distinct sound.
So that probably is up there for most embarrassing from a work perspective. Second most embarrassing from just a general personal perspective was that time I came to see you on the Gold Coast wearing a white pair of jeans. For those playing at home, do not have a newborn and then wear white jeans on the plane. Okay, guys, it is never going to end in your favour.
We should try and find that photo.
It'll be somewhere. If I can find it, I'll send it to you just for the lulz. Yeah. But basically, on the descent into the Gold Coast, Henry, my five-week-old, decided it would be a great idea to have a poo explosion in his nappy, which went out of the top of his pants, all over my lap, onto my white jeans in a puddle. I then looked across at the guy next to me on the plane and he gave me a look of like, I don't know what you're looking at me for. I can't help you. And so I pressed the overhead button and the flight attendant came out and she's like, oh, this is bad. And I'm like, yeah, it's really bad. And she's like, you're going to have to sprint to the bathroom, get that baby changed in about 3.5 seconds and get back in your seat because we're about to land this plane. And so I've grabbed my baby, threw him down on the change table in the toilet. I've just got wipes going everywhere. And I had to do the walk of shame because it was a Jetstar flight. So there was no, you know, business class or anything. I went to the front toilets and then I had to walk back to my chair with all of the eyeballs on me with a gigantic poo stain on my leg.
And newborn, it's like yellow orange. Mustard colour. Like it's bright.
The funniest part was when I sat down back in my chair, I got all of these looks of admiration. Like, yeah, girl, you handled that. And they were like tapping me on the shoulder being like, you handled that really well. And then I walked out and then people were coming up to me. I was like a hero. And then I got to you in the baggage carousel.
And I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my God, what have you done?
So that's a personal one.
Very funny. Can you share 5 take-home points for mums in business?
5 take-home points. Okay, if you haven't started your business yet, please stop waiting until you're ready because being ready is not a feeling, it's a decision. So make the decision and then go for it. In business as well, feel the fear and do it anyway. I want you to get outside of your comfort zone and focus on things that are going to push you. If you're feeling uncomfortable, that means that is a good sign for growth. Be very clear on your numbers. Understand what your numbers are. Know what your profit and loss looks like. Know what your margins are. Be very clear in understanding what your financials are. You don't have to be a tax planning expert or an accountant, but you do have to understand your numbers. Outsource and delegate what is not highest and best use of your time. So if you're, you know, not great at bookkeeping or you want to get a cleaner at home, do those things to free up your time and create space and time for yourself to show up as a CEO. And number 5, as your business starts to grow and you really start to catapult into that next level, you're going to be hustling hard and you are going to start to take on more than you can chew at times and your life will at times become quite imbalanced. So please make sure that you're taking time out in your week, every week, to fill your cup up. And I know that's a really throwaway line that a lot of people say, but I can tell you, if you burn out, that is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. And as a mum, our kids are reliant on us to show up and be a mum as well. And if we cannot put our own oxygen mask on, we cannot help anybody else. So it's really important to make sure that you're looking after yourself, eating good food, getting treatment and therapies when you need to, and making sure that you're replenishing yourself.
Awesome advice. Now, I always end the segment with the book that I'm reading of the week or a favourite book. Do you have a favourite book that you'd like to share
I do. I've spoken a lot this episode around visionaries and integrators. That book is Rocket Fuel, and that's where we talk about the different integrator personalities and visionary. So if you have a chance, I definitely recommend grabbing that book and finding out what you are and how you can harness things to make your life more successful and grow.
Awesome. Now, if the listeners at home want to check out you, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, or you can also find me at www.oliviajenkins.co.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Now, my book club book of the week, I thought would be fitting to have one that I often go back to whenever I am having like parenting struggles or whenever I'm wanting to ground myself within my own parenting. So it's Buddhism for Mothers. And usually I will give this book to any of my friends that are having a baby. And it's definitely my number one book for new mums. And it's huge for me in regards to how I parent my kids. So always with intention and always with love and always with meaning. But it's a really, really, really beautiful book. So that's my bookworm book club book of the week. Now, as always, guys, you can get involved in the closed Facebook group, which is just Flourish and Fulfilled, or on Instagram, Flourish and Fulfilled. And the listener hotline, in case you would like to leave me a question, is 0756 496851. Bye.